Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. One of the most misunderstood neurological conditions is Tourette's, which causes involuntary movements and sounds, called tics. The stereotype of Tourette's is a person who swears uncontrollably or shouts offensive comments at passersby, but for most who live with this condition, it's much more nuanced. Millie Lyman is the vocalist from Mean Bikini and lives with Tourette's and attention deficit hyperactivity. Because they weren't able to hide their tics or their ADHD symptoms growing up, Millie had to be authentic. Life with Tourette's can be challenging and emotionally painful, but Millie found positive outlets like punk rock and skateboarding to immerse themselves in. And when they're screaming their face off at a punk show, the Tourette's tics take a break. That 30 minutes or so is a reprieve, but also a chance to steal themselves.
My name is Millie Lyman. I am the front person of the hardcore punk band Mean Bikini, based out of a few various areas around Vancouver Island, but mostly Cumberland. I've been singing in heavy music bands for about 10 years now. I've always been drawn to the more extreme sides of music ever since I was a little kid. It all started with a fascination with death metal. And I started listening to that probably when I was 12 years old and just allowed for that journey to take its shape. I've definitely been more so in punk adjacent bands and communities for a long time, but I've been playing more specifically punk rock for about 5 years now. In my formative years, a lot of my friends were into punk as well, and we'd go to each other's shows and always found similar sense of community there and acceptance and opportunity to blow off steam and let out aggression and more of a positive space that wasn't centered around anger, but more so just like having that space to move emotions through you in a physical sense. At a young age, was diagnosed with ADHD and Tourette syndrome. It's been an interesting journey. I mean, it's all that I've known. But I think from a young age, having something visibly different about me that I didn't have the ability to hide was a blessing in that it has allowed me to show up in what I feel is an authentic way. A lot of my tics are motor tics. So I guess the way I could explain that is kind of involuntary movements and some sounds that I have control over, but it's really uncomfortable if I don't do the things. They've changed and taken many different forms throughout the years, a few of them more subtle than others. When I'm in a space of performing and on stage and the music is going, I don't have a single tick. And it's a beautiful opportunity to have a moment of reprieve from what my body is kind of fighting me to do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So, you know, my maybe ignorant perception was that, you know, go up on stage, you've got Tourette's, you're going to be all, you know, like you're having all these tics on stage. And for you to say that it's not happening when you go on stage, is it because you're getting into that sort of flow state of around being in the present and that takes a backseat for the performance?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's been like that ever since I started. And kind of reflecting on the things that I've taken interest in my life, all of my greatest passions are spaces in which you need to be fully immersed. Like I am an avid skater, snowboarder, mountain biker, all of which are spaces. And when you get into that flow state and you're so physically focused on something else, there's not really any room for the tics to be there and manifest. And yeah, performing and playing music is definitely one of those spaces. For anyone that's ever been to a Mean Bikini show, you will definitely take note that we are not a very standing still kind of band. Like, I like to get up there and move my body as much as possible. And I think like being in that state where I'm just like allowing the music to conduct my movements and getting into that flow space and being so focused on engaging with the audience, it just fully takes me out of my body. And I'm just operating fully on what's happening in that moment. And it's really nice to get that break.
For someone who doesn't know what Tourette's is or how it presents, I mean, imagine it presents differently for all kinds of folks, but can you tell how it is for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So like the formal description of what Tourette's is it's a neurological disorder. So it works in your nervous system, and basically it causes you to make involuntary movements and sounds, which are referred to as tics. Tourette's is definitely like a spectrum. There's other tic disorders that maybe someone, typically a child, would develop like a weird tic. I know lots of people that I've met in my life have had tics, but not a diagnosis of Tourette's, meaning that typically it won't be persisting for a super long period of time. I really love the opportunity to talk about this stuff because there's so many misconceptions about it through the media. I've had people straight up, when I've told them I have Tourette's, be like, "No, you don't." And I'm like, do you want to see my paperwork? I don't carry it on me, but I mean, I consider myself very fortunate for the severity of my tics, because there are people out there, for the people that are most commonly portrayed in the media, where they're seen swearing, obscenities, or sexual things. And that definitely exists. And it's actually a very uncommon form. And I feel so sad for the people that have to experience that. Like, you know, I have my own struggles with this stuff, but I couldn't imagine trying to maintain relationships or jobs or going to an interview with something so debilitating. But having the opportunity to talk about this definitely does shed some awareness, and I hope will allow other people with Tourette's to feel seen. It's tough having those misconceptions portrayed in the media and poking fun at people who have the worst form of that. That's a common aspect of stigma, right? Someone tells you that you're a certain way or you have some sort of defective thing or deficiency, and you get lumped into this group. That's why it just is so important to be able to connect with other people, like experience different things and have discussions. I've learned that through my work in addictions and mental health as well. Like, any opportunity you can talk and create dialogue surrounding stuff is like the strongest tool against these hurtful stigmas. I was just having a discussion with my partner about this, and like on like the ADHD side of things that I struggle with, I have a lot of difficulty with executive functions. I have difficulty going to work consistently. I have difficulty in relationships. I've experienced, you know, so much difficulty in school due to that. But a lot of that is because like somebody like myself with ADHD or Tourette's, or like yourself with bipolar, is, you know, we can become kind of like marginalized because it's seen as a smaller portion of people in society experience these things or think in different ways or learn in different ways. And all these systems that, you know, we've come to know through culture, for instance, the way that the school system teaches is just geared towards the broader range, I think, of people. And I've felt so much shame for not getting good grades in school. I've felt shame for not being able to show up to work all the time like a lot of people can. We as people are dynamic. Our brains are all different. We all function differently. We have all different strengths and beautiful attributes and things that make us special. And we also have things that we struggle with.
So growing up, you must have had a lot of, you mentioned stigma. I mean, folks must have been cruel to you in some cases because you were different. What was it like growing up with Tourette's and presenting yourself in an authentic way, but also, I would imagine, trying to hide it in some ways too?
For sure. I mean, as a kid, it was definitely harder because I didn't have as the sense of self and awareness of the world as I do now. It's one of those things that, like, you know, you can't hide, right? I can't really suppress a tick. And when I was a kid, my tics were worse. Having to be in a classroom situation in a school and that kind of forced social setting, yeah, there was no way to hide it. And, you know, kids would obviously laugh. And I had my friends at the time would, you know, I was kind of would often find myself as like the punching bag in the group for the butt of jokes and stuff. There are times that I can recall that it was really hurtful and I just wanted to be normal and I wanted to sit still. And I still have moments where I'm like, it would just be so nice to experience what it's like to just be still. So yeah, it definitely did make it hard. I was seen as disruptive a lot of the time. I definitely think like a few years in elementary school, I got sent to the principal's office every day. And I can't necessarily think back to exactly what sparked that disruptiveness, but I'm sure that it had something to do with the Tourette's and, you know, in conjunction with the ADHD and probably acting out. I definitely was like one of those kind of class clown people because I found it easier to be like, hey, everyone's kind of laughing at me anyways. Let's give them a reason to laugh that I'm in control of. So I would often act out and try and just get a laugh out of people, get a rise out of people, get a reaction out of people because they were going to do that anyways. So if I was doing it intentionally, I kind of had control in that.
So you mentioned getting into metal when you're quite young, and then obviously that comes with other forms of loud and heavy and fast music as well. Do you remember the feeling that you had when you first heard the music? Did it open you up and did it address some of the struggles that you were having?
Absolutely. I mean, I think like that side of the spectrum of music, be it punk rock or metal or anything in that general area, a lot of it does address the darker side of emotions and a lot of themes of ridicule and isolation and stuff. And I think that's why a lot of us have found such salvation in it. And, you know, one of the things that I was really happy to hear in what you discuss about your experience is like, yes, like it has had a profound calming effect on my mind. One of the things about metal specifically that I've loved so much is the intricacy in the music. And I find I can like put my headphones in and kind of go into what I like to call sensory cocooning mode a little bit, where the only thing I'm experiencing is like, I can dive so deeply into picking apart and deciphering the sounds and the music. Like, you know, you give me a good 320 BPM blast beat and I'm chill as a cucumber. The loud and the fast and the stimulating music itself has a really profound calming effect on the mind, and the topics explored in a lot of the music are relatable. A lot of people that don't listen to that music, if they could give it a chance, they would find a sense of connection and a sense of meaning to their own life in that, just because it is such a raw form of like expression that people get to create.
So listening to music gives you that solace and that feeling of peace in some ways. So what about playing music? What about jumping around and screaming at people and playing in a punk band? How does that feeling differ from the listening?
It's similar, except it's more visceral, obviously. In listening to the music, I can relax my body, go into my mind, and be kind of in a peaceful space where my mind is quiet. Like a big part of ADHD is what's been pretty classically characterized as a brain that has a million things going at one time. And that's one aspect of the listening part that is really helpful because it kind of brings it all into just one streamlined place. Whereas performing, the entire self, the mind, the body, the spirit are into that one streamlined space. So it's like we have listening to music is like very cerebral, whereas playing and performing, it's like the entire, your entire being is just, I don't know, a little molecule floating around in this big thing that is greater than the sum of its parts.
And for me, being in a band and playing in front of people, it just goes by in a snap. The band starts and then all of a sudden you realize it's over and what just happened. And there's moments of me feeling like I am there and I'm seeing my bandmates and kind of like being in that kind of moment. And then there's the moment of just being in this zen state of like You could meditate, but it's like it feels like it's been 10 seconds and it's been half an hour.
Absolutely. We have those like moments of lucidity throughout the performance that can happen. And I found like playing in different spaces and different states, emotional states, all have a differing experience. I, at a young age, was pretty heavily medicated with stimulant medication for my ADHD. And I feel like kind of my generation was one of the first to really be put on these drugs to try and medicate. That was kind of when ADHD was taking like its prevalence as like an actual diagnosis. So I was given these stimulants at a young age. And one thing about ADHD is that our brains are low on dopamine. We have difficulty with dopamine production. So the stimulants help your brain produce this. Now, for myself, it was really difficult because stimulants are also really bad for tic disorders like Tourette's. So on one hand, it would help me concentrate. On the other hand, it would make my tics way worse, which was difficult. So eventually, when I got older and was able to kind of inform my own decisions a bit better, I decided to get off of the medication because I didn't like how it made me feel. Fast forward to my mid-20s, and I found myself dealing with a pretty serious coke problem. Cocaine works on your dopamine receptors. So it makes sense that a brain that A, was kind of like wired to stimulant medications at a young age, and B, is low on dopamine. I found I was self-medicating a lot and struggled with that for quite some time. And I found I would always do a couple bumps before going on stage, and mainly came with the last band I was in when I lived in Vancouver. We were all partying pretty hard, and it was the first actual punk band that I was in, and we were having a blast. It was like super fun music, super eclectic. I was in a band with like all my best buds, but we were all big enablers for each other. And I remember the first time I played a show with that band, not high on coke, and was like, oh my God, this is so much better. But I was still really struggling. And, you know, and what you're talking about, like moments of lucidity and being able to connect, I found that cocaine, although it would boost my confidence, it also numbed me out in a really gnarly way. And I always felt like there was this veil that was there between me and the audience. One of my absolute favorite things about playing and performing in the space that I have the privilege to take as the front person is being able to connect with the audience, being able to create safe spaces through conversation, being able to advocate for what we care about and create inclusivity. And I could hardly look people in the eyes when I was on stage, when I was on coke. I felt like a really profound realization that this thing that I thought was helping me, I realized was taking me away from the experience that I had worked so hard to be able to be a part of. I am happily 2.5 years free of cocaine after a lot of really hard work.
Nice, way to go. That's amazing.
Thank you. It's been a really rewarding journey. And it's also helped me with my job as an outreach worker and working in harm reduction, just having that my own experience with addiction. But now, like, one of the biggest things that I value most is being present and being able to really feel myself at the show and feel the crowd and feel the experience. And I still drink, and that's a whole other journey that I'm on right now and have made great strides in. But I have my times that I will imbibe more than I need to or would like to. And I remember we played 3 festivals this past summer, and at 2 of those festivals, I had a meltdown after the set because I just felt like I wasn't as present as I would like to be. So it's a really interesting thing, like having this realization of, okay, cocaine is not helping, it's hurting, it's taking me away, working to get to a place where I can connect more. And now I have those moments, and like, I don't care if there's mistakes in the set, but if I feel like I wasn't present and I wasn't fully there to experience what we were trying to achieve collectively with ourselves and the audience, that hurts me and is something that I need to work on a little bit, because we are only human and can't always be 100% on all the time.
A lot of folks dealing with different mental health conditions talk about how once acceptance comes and once they've had a chance to stabilize and reflect, how these conditions are positives in some ways. horrible negatives in a lot of ways for certain people. And I've had that too, where I've gone through the worst depressions and uncontrollable manias and just awful. But now that I've been able to stabilize and I've got that behind me in some ways, I can see the benefits that come out of bipolar and the creativity and the empathy and things that I hold dear. I'm able to show people that I've got these things. And I'm wondering what that's like with both Tourette's and ADHD for you. Do you see those positivities? Are you at a place in your life where you can embrace those?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I do feel very empowered by the hand that I was dealt. And although at times it feels like a hindrance, I can very clearly see a lot of positive attributes through a reflection on myself and just through educating myself about both of those conditions, if you want to call them that. For ADHD, I do feel like I have the ability to hyper-focus. I've been able to put a lot of work into the band, be it helping book tours or writing music and stuff. I can get so hyper-focused where that is the only thing that is happening in my world, and it allows me to work really effectively and efficiently. Also, having an excess of energy at times, which definitely like has polarities to it. Like a lot of times I do feel like I can't even move, but when I have those moments of high energy, it allows me, yeah, to be a fun and exuberant performer. And the Tourette's thing, not being able to hide a very big difference about myself, has allowed me to accept who I am and show up genuinely in ways that like people wouldn't necessarily think. It's like, you know, yeah, like walking in the world, having my tics is one thing, but I also feel like I can tell people how I really feel. I feel like I can communicate genuinely because I don't see any benefits to hiding anything. I see benefits to being expressive. And I also, you know, through these things have experienced marginalization through being neurodiverse, marginalizations through experiencing addiction struggles, marginalization in my experience in school. And in the time that me and Bikini's been a band, my focus on what a punk rock scene is to look like and what we want to be creating at our shows and in our space is like absolute inclusivity and populations that have been marginalized. We've been working really hard since the band's inception to reignite the punk scene in our little village of Cumberland. And it has been so beautiful because since its reinception, there was a scene out here for many years and it kind of died out around the time that I moved out here. And the majority, 90% of the people that we're seeing coming to our shows are young queer kids and young people that are on the autism spectrum, people from all walks of life, but large groups of folks who have experienced marginalization. And we preach and work hard to openly state, like, if this is you, this space is for you. And if this isn't you, you're welcome here as well, but make sure you're keeping open space for these folks because this is for them. Through my experience, I have a lens into what it's like to feel like that and have a understanding of priority for creating spaces for other people that are struggling.
Yeah, that floors me as well. Kind of the same thing here in Cathet. Every time that I think the scene has kind of died off, we'll put on a show, because all ages shows are hard to put on, as you know. And we'll put on an all ages show, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, so many queer kids, so many youth, so many people that you wouldn't see at any other show. And they mm-hmm. always seem to be out there, and somehow they can gravitate towards these punk shows, and they can find a place that's so special. As you and I know, I'm always just blown away that there's youth out there that are just so excited about it, just like I was when I was young.
Absolutely. I often will finish off, especially shows where I can see that there's a lot of young folks there. Like the last thing I'll say when we're done our set is start a band.
I did the same thing.
Just do it. Start a band. We need you. Being young and different and scared and uncomfortable and awkward and anxious for so long, I want to help channel a space that people can step out of that for themselves. And that's why we are doing what we're doing. Resistance! Be brave, but you're still here! Live hard, let the voice
That was my conversation with Millie Lyman of Mean Bikini, mean-bikini.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at screentherapyhq.com/store. And for even more designs, check out Scream Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Scream Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.